At Link Humans, we've spoken to countless HR leaders from around the world, all trying to measure employer brand. The Employer Brand Index is used by GE and Unilever on a quarterly basis to uncover and measure their reputation as an employer, with a final score they can track over time to see how things are changing. We look at what candidates, employees, and alumni say about your organization in an employment context. If you're looking to research your employer reputation, or if you're developing an EVP, this would be the perfect time to create your Employer Brand Index baseline. You'll get a full report of insights and recommendations that you can use to improve your employer brand over time. Head over to employerbrandindex.co and start measuring.
Hey, sans Vaisan. It's Jorgen Sundberg here with the Employer Branding Podcast by Link Humans, London's employer branding agency. Now, McKinsey report that 90% of major brands are making it a top priority to focus on branded customer experiences as their main differentiator. Surely, it then also makes sense to focus also on the quality of the branded candidate experience. Are we in agreement? Fantastic. Let's start the show. Hello.
Hello.
Who's that?
How are you?
Hi, Russell. please let our listeners know who you are and what you do.
All right. Well, again, thanks for having me, Jorgen. My name is Russell Miyake, and I am the Senior Vice President of Global Creative and Global Creative Director for TMP Worldwide, headquartered out of New York City. What my role is I oversee our creative and employer brand groups, as well as being a part of our labs group, which, you know, focuses on the emerging technologies, HR paradigm shifts, and so forth of innovation. I come from a background in consumer and corporate branding and design, working, you know, some from various agencies in Silicon Valley and California, ranging from corporate design studios and retail corporations.
Fantastic. And today we wanted to talk about branded candidate experience design or branded candidate journeys. So let's start with the basics. What is it?
Well, okay. What I'd like to do is always start with the why. So yeah. as we know, we're in a world right now that's become highly homogenous, right? It's cluttered with choices that diminish the ability to differentiate. And so with so many channels and touch points available for brands to use, we're being bombarded with content, both bad and good. And so candidate behavior continues to change just as fast as the consumer behavior. So with that, being in a customer-centric candidate world, we're treating the candidates basically like we are treating the consumers and marketing to them that way. And the fact that all of this innovative technology is parsing all of the value propositions of corporations with seamless interactions and touch points, it puts importance on organizing these branded candidate journeys that allow us to connect all of these interactions that shapes the relationships between the candidates and the company. So, we've all heard that content is king, but yeah, it's ineffective if it's not in context. And so what I mean by that is the simple fact that people's decision styles, all of these candidates, they change based on the context of the receptivity of their situation. So in other words, if you're pushing these messages out on people out of context with their state of mind or situation, chances are you're not going to connect with them. In fact, you may annoy them and just become part of the marketing noise that gets in the way. So what this means is it's challenging to stand out and grab attention and target that right talent. And it's not, again, what your brand is saying, but it's how we're making those candidates feel or do. So with that said, every brand right now obviously offers some degree of candidate experience, but this is where the branded candidate experience design comes into play by mapping branded experiences to the candidate's needs. And so what it is basically just the same as, it's an acronym borrowed, same as UX design. We have user experience design, and when we build interactive and websites, the same principle applies to how we, you know, create these experiential pathways and, you know, the candidate experience through a strategic approach that, you know, builds these experiences and touch points plotted throughout that candidate life cycle in order to connect everywhere in context to timing and relevances. So that's basically what a candidate experience design is all about. It's plotting out these experiences that not only, you know, deliver what the brand stands for, but it sustains this journey that these candidates have in order to shape that relationship with the candidate all the way through those touch points from attract, inform, apply, and even all the way to onboarding.
And so what's the problem we're solving here? Is it that candidates get the wrong sort of messaging and they don't apply or they don't find the employer of interest?
Yeah, so that's the result of that fragmentation I was mentioning, that with all of these multiple touch points and the behaviors of the way consumers and again, the consumer driven technology obviously is affecting the way we all communicate and access information. Yeah. Well, this has sort of, again, created an incredible fierce means of connecting with them at the right time, at the right moment. You know, those moments of truth that everyone goes through. People are extremely busy. They're multitasking. They're snacking on media, and they want, you know, relevancy. But they, if you can, you could be relevant. But if you're not resonating with them at that moment, you're going to miss them. And be, you know, as you probably have gone through on your phones or your devices, there's material that just is being blasted at you on a daily basis. And there's so much that we ignore.
So how do we then go about mapping branded experiences to the candidate's needs?
Yeah. So when we look at the candidate experience, you know, we know, again, as I mentioned, there are four basic stages of a candidate life cycle, right? Attract, inform, apply, and then the onboarding stage. But each stage poses a different context to the receptivity of their messages, right? So to help us understand how to connect with those audiences, it's important to understand who they are, what are their motivations, what's their emotional state in order to understand the, you know, the receptivity and context of the decision style at each stage. And so in order to understand this audience, it's critical to look beyond that typical functional benefits that people seek in jobs, you know, and uncover those emotional motivations and characteristics that they may drive, you know, certain behaviors that they have and decision styles. And once we understand all of that, then we can map those primary message points to the EVP that will answer to their wants and needs at each stage.
So give us some examples of these emotional triggers or drivers.
So, you know, for instance, some of the states of the game in the attraction stage. So here in this stage of the game is usually the point in where we need to grab their attention. They may not be even aware of the opportunity. They might even not even have that organization in their consideration set to even want to work for that organization, right? So that attraction stage is where probably the most high level motivational needs are at, where they're saying, okay, who are you? Why are you relevant to me? And if it's a candidate, say, for instance, let's just pick a role type, an engineer, they're looking for specific types of things that are going to enhance their career in terms of technology, get them into more knowledge bases, and how do they work on less legacy, you know, coding environments and more cutting edge, let's just say, environments. So their motivational needs change at that stage of the game and when we're trying to attract them. So it might not be, you know, diving into a value proposition of comp, let's just say, you know, what are their comp benefits going to be at that stage? Because they're not ready to even think about compensation. They're thinking more in terms of, where is my career going to go at that stage? How are you going to affect me? And why are you relevant? Those are the type of motivations that we're trying to attack and attach key specific, you know, value propositions of the organization that we can dial up and dial down. Where the uniqueness comes into play is, you know, how we creatively express that brand to them at that stage of the game. How did we grab their attention?
So tell us what implications are here for employer branding, for technology, and even for content strategies?
Yeah, so as I mentioned before, you know, employer branding is being delivered through more touch points and experiences than ever before. So there's a greater chance for fragmentation, as I mentioned, or disconnection to the messages out of context to the person's needs. So for recruitment, creativity and talent marketing and employer branding, it has to work smarter, right? We're persuading people to make a decision that's going to change their and possibly alter their lives, right? A decision that's going to involve, maybe it's even a, well, obviously it could be a change to their commute, leaving familiar faces, working in a new culture, and even, this is the other big one, is establishing their credibility all over again with a whole new group of employees. So there's some real emotional impact that's happening at that stage. So in the marketing noise that's out there right now, smart, creative employer branding punches through that sameness. You know, it apprehends attention, it inspires and drives conversations, not only by being relevant, but to resonate with them at that time, at that right moment. So people are not used to, you know, we don't go around looking for advertising about careers just the same as we're embraced with all of this marketing noise of these consumer products. So their patterns, you know, need to be interrupted in a way that's going to be receptive enough for them to care or even be curious about this employment opportunity that they may not have ever been thinking about. And with all these newer technologies that are becoming more intelligent and more ubiquitous, this makes it more powerful to tell this emotional storytelling through these content strategies. So content strategies become even more immersive, right, and more relevant at the right time, at the right moment, and strategic enough to create these creative experiences that are, you know, organized in a way that plots out these branded journeys that brings these candidates along to associate themselves with a brand that's unique, authentic, and memorable, ultimately enough to persuade the right people to join the right companies.
Okay, and if we back up a little bit, you mentioned about these critical moments of truth when the candidate really decides whether to go for a job or if they're interested. So in the candidate life cycle, how do you go about to really uncover and really anticipate these moments?
Well, what's really interesting about that is to help us uncover those moments of truth. This is where we start to put on our ethnographic hats, right? We start to become cultural anthropologists. We start to really dive into the psychology of the way humans make decisions and how do we get them to, how do we anticipate those moments, right? So to uncover those moments of truth within each stage of the cycle, what we need to do is we need to empathize with their needs at each moment. And in order to do that, what we sort of, you take that ethnographic approach to getting inside their shoes, role-playing inside their minds to understand them enough empathize their needs. And so we can do this obviously through empathy mapping or our audience research, where we can get inside those emotional moments that research sometimes often generalizes. And so it's, what am I thinking, feeling, doing at each stage of the game? And the technique helps us inform all of this. You know, what are they thinking and feeling and doing in ways that are most likely to act in specific candidate life cycle stages? What it does, it puts us in the candidate's shoes and it allows us to understand their pain points in what emotionally affects them and tailor our marketing messages that we know we have to dial up or dial down according to their stage of the game that we empathize with. And it also uncovers nuances, right? The way we empathize with them, it uncovers the nuances that we may not even have thought about that leads to even newer ideas. And that's the exciting part about empathy mapping.
So give us an example of a discovery you made that you didn't think about, which actually came about from this mapping.
Well, let's see. I will say client not withheld.
Yeah.
We were doing an empathy session for a large government agency. And one of the things they were looking for was cyber technologists. And through an empathy mapping session, we found that one of the insights that we uncovered from these groups, and again, these were what we do is we group them into a big room loaded with sticky pads, if you will. And they were pretty much all new recent hires because we, you know, you want people that just sort of have a fresh mindset of what they just went through in the recruitment process. So they're in there talking about us, what they were thinking, feeling, doing. We found some insight that was fascinating that, you know what, they don't believe in recruiters. And it blew our mind. We're saying, what? You don't believe in recruiters? What does that mean? And so we were able to uncover the fact that they don't channel them their work careers through the same channels as the majority of everyone else does through the recruitment process. They, in fact, go out of their way to get hired directly from a different source. They don't even talk to recruiters.
Wow.
And it was loaded, of course, with so many reasons why, from everything from trust to the fact of the general principle of like that group doesn't like to be marketed to. And that could be because they're in the middle of deciphering authenticity.
Yeah. Wow. Okay. Right. And what are some of the typical pitfalls that that could happen when you're trying to create branded candidate journeys?
Yeah. So interesting enough, you know, continuing on the conversation of understanding the audience, one thing to keep in mind that a branded CX is, it's really actually nothing without a strong creative platform. So in other words, if the creative team goes away with all of this research and they come back with a weak platform, everything else, no matter what it is, the journey, the candidate experience is all going to just basically tumble and it'll be just as weak. So that's one thing we found that has to still be front and center as the North Star along with the EVP. The second thing that I think is a thing to watch out for is when you're doing all of the audience research, one of the things that a lot of people have sort of this propensity to want to do is they want to uncover every single nuance possible under the sun. Mm-hmm. So, you know, we should not overthink and dissect the hundreds of profiles and personas. You can actually acquire such a significant insight about the makeup of the candidates from even the job descriptions, LinkedIn profiles, or even the O-Net data online. And once you overlay this type of information with the role type and demographic and geographic considerations, your insightful, the insight that you can get from this information can be incredibly efficient to develop personas around without having to come up with hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of personas.
Got it. Okay. All right. So if we want to do this, is there a way to measure return on investment here?
Sure. That's another exciting thing about this. So, you know, through planning and mapping, you can absolutely measure and evaluate the different candidate touch points along the journey. Mm-hmm. And of course, depending on, you know, the objectives, you can look at different data points, right? And different sets of expectations for media and content within each stage of the candidate's life cycle. So each stage of that candidate life cycle can actually have their own priority KPIs. Right. So let's take, for instance, the attraction stage, the primary KPIs. You could actually have things such as audience growth, audience reach, social engagement, and even tactical things like new career site visitors based on the brand. Whereas let's take, for instance, at the application stage, you could have primary KPIs could be something like completed applications, cost per applications, based on the compelling nature of the candidate journey that you're pulling them through. But again, ROI, and you probably know this, can be defined, you know, beyond just conversion too, right? Just as an example, you can extract a path, speaking of the candidate experience, you can extract a path from a candidate with specific touch points along the way. And then you can classify each of those interactions into like appropriate candidate lifecycle stages. And then when you do that, what you can do is you can actually evaluate all media beyond just that conversion and be and build out candidate profiles of media uses and interactions. And what that allows you to do is you can continually improve and optimize that branded journey along the way. But ultimately, you can do so many things with this the type of ROI that you can get from this. You can aggregate all that information and start comparing role types to role types. So you can unveil things like, okay, time to attract, average touch points, specific jobs that they're interested in, message resonance between one type of role type like IT versus marketing or engineering versus sales. That's the exciting thing, is where when you start juxtaposing the findings with what you know about the other role types to strengthen the brand, you can absolutely come up with a competitive advantage.
Nice. Okay. And have you got any companies out there that you'd like to highlight or who are really good at this and our listeners should be checking out?
Well, there's some nice work out there being done by large progressive brands, obviously like a Virgin. But there's some great stuff that companies are doing, like, for instance, those high volume type organizations where they need candidates on a high volume process, as well as professionals like UPS. The companies like that are fascinating, where you have to be extremely strategic in the way you're plotting out those journeys, because you have such a diverse amount of individuals that you could hire for. Like, well, UPS could basically hire everybody, but you know, they have opportunities for so many people, but you have to make sure that the right message and of the brand value proposition that UPS has is resonating with those right people at the right time in order to make that happen. So they're doing a pretty good job. This is still somewhat new to the talent acquisition area, as it leverages heavily on strategic consumer brand approaches to customer experiences.
Great. Okay. So this is new, but let's look into the crystal ball. What do you think is going to happen over the next 12 to 24 months?
Yeah. You said it right there, right? I mean, it happens that fast. It could happen in the next week, right? This is moving so fast. Like, so there's so many new things going on right now and forecasted, both around people analytics you've heard the whole thing about future of work. What does that mean? Some of the things that I've been researching and learning from research firms around the world and what's going on right now is around this whole fourth industrial revolution that we're in right now and what it's all about, which is this convergence of physical, digital, and AI together, right? So the obvious sequence of events right now is we're seeing right before our eyes is the democratization of innovation, right? This whole thing where technology is basically a commodity that's unleashing all of this creativity, and it's democratized innovation to the point where efficiency and functional expertise is like no longer a distinct competitive advantage. As an example, you need a system that, say, is going to automatically capture human behavior and competencies and skill sets. Well, don't build it. Go buy it. It's out there. Go buy the competencies to build that, if you will. It's like, you know, it's so available now. You need a system that takes on the entire recruitment experience, that interviews and hires right on the application, like applying for a credit card online. Go buy the platform. It exists. You know, it's amazing how quickly all of this is happening. So where does this leave like leadership, right? Where does it leave companies in terms of their workforce strategies, how they're being led? Well, what I just was interesting that what I found from certain conferences I just attended, where things such as soft leadership skills will start to replace functional expertise as companies, you know, seek to unleash automation and efficiencies within their business models, so they can take more advantage of creativity in their teams. I had this honor of meeting Jeremiah Aoyang, who made a great point. He said that a balance point between humanity and robots will be the center of the ethical discussion. So what he's saying is that we all got to be prepared for this discussion on how we're going to help make this change for the world a better thing rather than in it being something negative. And of course, it also hits upon that whole trend of hunting for authenticity, right? Due to the deep machine learning and AI that we have right now. Well, who is human and who isn't, right? What am I talking to? Who am I interacting with? Is this a bot or is this a real human? So there's a lot of interesting things that's happening on a paradox level.
A lot of that existential stuff. It's going to be an interesting ride ahead, I'm sure. So final question, Russell, where can our listeners learn more about your work and where can they connect with yourself?
Well, let's see. I am definitely can be connected on Twitter at R Miyaki. It's at R-M-I-Y-A-K-I. I'm obviously on LinkedIn. You can find me there. Or you can contact me through the organization at TMP. My information is online as well there. I've been at several different conferences recently at the Indeed conference and so forth. And there's some upcoming conferences coming up that will be published on the website.
Great. Thank you so much for your time today.
Absolutely.
All right. I hope that was useful. Everything Russell and I discussed will, of course, be in the show notes article, which you'll be able to find at employerbrandingpodcast.com. Right, so I just wanted to extend a very big thank you for all of those of you who took advantage of last week's offer and bought our book, Employee Advocacy, The Ultimate Handbook, on Amazon. So it was on a very good offer last week. And as a result, it's now become an Amazon bestseller in the Kindle marketing category. So that's great news. Now, if you missed out on this promo, you can still find the book on Amazon for a very reasonable $5. So I hope you check it out. Just go to Amazon and tap in Employee Advocacy and you'll find it on there. Right. Webinar alert. Ding, 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 ding. Next week, Wednesday, the 25th of July at 12 noon Eastern Time, we are going to talk about the secret to boosting employer brand with predictive hiring. So I am going to be joined by Kristen Hamilton, who is the CEO and co-founder of Kuru. And we're going to talk about how to build a future culture you want by intentionally focus on bringing in the right candidates aligned to your company. So the link to this will be in the show notes. Hope to see you next Wednesday at 12 noon Eastern time. So that's EDT, I believe. And to make sure that you stay up to date on all things employer brand, events, podcasts, webinars, books, articles, all that good stuff, go to linkhumans.com and sign up to our newsletter. Just scroll down on the page and you'll see this sign up form right there. And I'll stick a link to that in the show notes as well. So check those out. If you have any questions, feel free to ping me, find me on social, or just ping me an email at jorgen@linkhumans.com. And that is it for this week. Many thanks for tuning in and look forward to catching up next time. Hey-do!
I always like to shake the conferences that I speak at up at the very beginning just to see how many people are ready for some different thinking. And I always pull a quote out of one of my favorite comedians, Stephen Wright. And the first thing I do is, stand up in front of the crowd. And then I hold up my hand. I go, okay, all those who believe in psychokinesis, raise my hand. Or I'll also ask of them about, this whole thing about, so how do you tell when you're out of invisible ink, right? It's just these things that I always think about and it gets people to start looking at each other. Where is this guy coming from? So there's so many different quotes that he comes up with. But, you know, the one I always end up with is like, many people quit looking for work when they find a job. And you know, as cynical as that could be, there is some interesting things about that. But there's also some controversial things about that, because it's like, well, do they or will they? And so a lot of the interesting things, again, coming from Stephen Wright, and it's the only reason why is because I just like comedians to make you think differently and catch you off guard.